From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Guy Raz. Occupy Wall Street protests have sprung up in cities across the U.S. and around the world. The common denominator among them all is protesters' commitment to stay, to camp out. They've pitched tents and built large, impromptu communities. It's a form of protest that echoes throughout American history.
In 1932, another group of protesters set up encampments and vowed to stay until their voices were heard. They were World War I veterans. After the war, the government had promised them cash bonuses for their service, payable in 1945. But then the Depression struck, and veterans, desperate for relief, descended on Washington, D.C., demanding payment immediately. Producers Joe Richmond and Sumara Freemark of Radio Diaries have the story of what came to be known as the Bonus Army.
America in 1932, the land of lost homes and shattered dreams. Millions of Americans homeless, hungry, and without hope.
People were selling apples on the corners, everywhere, knocking on doors, asking for food.
The living conditions were horrible. The kids, they were lucky to eat. But that was life in those days.
And there were thousands of veterans. They're broke and they don't have a job, just wandering the country aimlessly, just trying to find something to do.
From all over the country, unemployed veterans of World War I demand immediate payment of a cash bonus promised them for the future. They need it now. They want it now.
My name is Paul Dixon.
My name is Tom Allen.
And we wrote The Bonus Army, an American Epic.
In Portland, Oregon, 1932, a group of veterans got together saying, let's go to Washington, because the way you get things from the government is to convince the government to give it to you. We can lobby for the bonus now. And a bunch of them went down to the railroad yards with a bugle and an American flag and got onto freight trains and head to Washington, D.C. And that's how it started. As they move eastward, it catches on. Radio stations pick it up, newspapers pick it up, veterans start jumping on freights. Suddenly, out of the whole depression, comes guys doing something. There was hope there. It was a magnet for veterans and their families who had nothing, and they wanted to be part of it.
And so we just packed up a tin tub and a wash pot and what few clothes we needed, and my banjo. Put our instruments up, and we let out, playing our music.
They come down from Maine, and they come from Florida, Los Angeles, coming from the deep south, they're coming from everywhere.
The trucks came, old buses, they came in hanging on freight cars. Some had those old dilapidated Fords with 20 people hanging on them, you know.
They have a mission. They have a destination. And it's called Washington, D.C. The first guys arrive May 25th of 1932. Within 2 or 3 weeks, there are probably around 20,000 veterans in town.
Where was it that you came to Washington?
I came to Washington to get my bonus, and I'm going to wait for till I get it if I have to wait till 1945.
They set up camps in vacant lots, abandoned buildings, and in an army-style encampment along the Anacostia River. At one end of the camp was a dump, and that's where they found stuff they could make their houses out of, car wrecks and chicken cages and pieces of wood.
We got our place fixed up, got our wash pot out, and had it cleaned up good, and got set up and started playing our music. People was coming out, and they'd stand there and listen. They'd stop and drop money in Steve's hat. He had his uniform on. We had a good time.
I mean, there are people in Washington who go down there on a Sunday with their kids.
People came down and brought them sleeping bags and tents and brought them cigarettes, brought them food, brought them big bags of potatoes and sacks of turnips and a piece of pork or something, and they'd throw everything in the pot, turn it into a monstrous communal stew.
We ate better than we did at home. Steve would go out into town, and they'd load him up on vegetables and on honey buns, donuts. Well, we never had the money to eat such as that at home.
And there was a library, and there was a post office. They had their own barber shops, produced their own newspaper, the BEF News. It had streets with the names of states. You know, there's Mississippi Street and New Jersey Street over here.
It's a shanty town. It's the biggest Hooverville in the country, probably around 20,000 veterans. And they are determined not to be bums.
One nation! With liberty!
The rules are no alcohol, no weapons, no fighting, no panhandling, and you are not a communist. There was an absolute ban on anybody being communist.
Bonus Army, cover!
And all along, the public was very much on the side of these guys.
The veterans' cause had the blessings of the retired Marine Corps Commandant, General Smedley D. Butler.
I never saw such fine Americanism as is exhibited by you people. You have just as much right to have a lobby here as any steel corporation. Makes me so damn mad a whole lot of people speak of you as tramps. By God, they didn't speak of you as tramps in 1917 and 18. No. Take it from me. This is the greatest demonstration of Americanism we've ever had. Pure Americanism. Don't make any mistake about it. You've got the sympathy of the American people. Now, don't you lose it. Yeah.
The veterans' arrival puts the pressure on Congress.
On June 15th, the House of Representatives passes the bonus. 211 to 176, it passes.
And it looks like good news. All that has to happen is the Senate has to pass it.
In their last stand at the United States Capitol, the Bonus Army staged a final demonstration which they hoped would induce the government to pay the cash they demanded.
Several thousand veterans go up to the Hill, and they're waiting for the news. And they're full of joy and happy. They're going to get their bonus.
Three cheers for the bonus that we're going to get.
And the Senate turns it down. And it's all over. So that's the end of the Bonus Army in the view of official Washington. Everybody expects they're all going to go home. But they won't go home.
Comrades, I want you to know, I am not advising anybody to go home.
The numbers drop, but the hardcore stays. And there's no indication they're ever going to leave.
We intend to maintain our army in Washington, regardless of who goes home.
And there's a little panic that starts at the top of government. They want to get this thing over with.
Police are entering the first of a score of old buildings appropriated by bonus seekers to clear them out.
It all starts sort of peacefully, and everything seems okay, and somebody throws a brick. And all of a sudden, two guys are shot.
Words soon changed to blows. There was a scuffle, a shower of bricks, a shot, and the whole affair got beyond control of the Washington police, who for months had handled the dangerous situation well.
This is now the moment at which the Army can take over. That's when they bring in Douglas MacArthur.
My name is Fred Blacker. I'm 16 years old, and I was standing on the corner waiting for a trolley. By God, all of a sudden I see these cavalrymen come up the avenue and then swinging down to the mall. I thought it was a parade. I asked the gentleman standing there, I said, do you know what's going on? What holiday is this? He says, it's no parade, bud. He says, Army's coming in to wipe out all these bonus people down here.
I'm John D. Joseph. I was a photographer. Worked for Wire Service. And when I got up there, I was amazed. MacArthur coming down Pennsylvania Avenue on horse, and all these tanks behind him.
The 3rd Cavalry from Fort Myer, the 12th Infantry from Fort Washington, and the 1st Light Tank Regiment, grim and relentless, the greatest concentration of fighting troops in Washington since 1865.
These guys got in there, and they start waving their sabers, chasing these veterans out, and they start shooting tear gas. It was just so much noise and confusion, hollering. There was smoke and haze. People couldn't breathe.
I was in bad shape from the tear gas. Tear gas, damn it. And then more tear gas. It was a mess.
As night begins to fall, soldiers cross the bridge and they go to the camp at Anacostia. MacArthur gives them 20 minutes to get out.
Here come a cop down there, oh boy. And he said, you all get out of here.
One soldier takes a torch and applies it to one of the tents, and they start torching anything that's still standing.
And to make sure the men will really stay out, the soldiers have orders to burn down the unsanitary and illegal camp.
That night, they burned everything. The sky was red, you know, and you could see the blaze all over Washington.
And the roaring flames sound the death knell to the fantastic Bonus Army in the shadow of the capital of the United States of America.
Within a week, these pictures, these images were all over the country. Every little town, and the newsreel comes on. The people see MacArthur and Patton driving out the troops that had won the First World War for us, burning them out, tear gassing them, tanks in the streets. It was unthinkable.
The reaction to it is, we can't let that happen again.
No more treating the veterans like we did in the last war. No more bonus armies.
I always thought I liked General MacArthur, and I still do, but what they did that night to those soldier boys, I'll never forget that.
Four years later, in 1936, the veterans did receive their bonuses, and in 1944, Congress passed the GI Bill to help military veterans transition back to civilian life and to acknowledge the debt owed to those who risked their lives for their country.
The voices you heard include the late Fred Blacker, John DeJoseph, and Lily Linebarrier. She played banjo in the Bonus Army String Band, which we're hearing now. Our story was produced by Joe Richmond and Sumara Freemark and edited by Deborah George and Ben Shapiro. Special thanks to Alexis Gillespie.